Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Hoard, and this is the Bengals Booth Podcast, the In My Mind, I'm Going to Carolina edition, as we get you set for Sunday's game at Carolina between the 2-0 Bengals and the 1-1 Carolina Panthers. Coming up, Dave Lapham will join me to discuss the latest Bengals news, and you'll hear from two great guests. First, he has a distinctive voice and some memorable ways of calling the action, including with no regard for human life when describing NBA dunks. Kevin Harlan will call the Bengals-Panthers game this week on CBS, and we'll talk to him about a wide variety of topics, including if Cam Newton is the LeBron James of the NFL. And after we visit with Kevin, we'll do our Know the Foe segment on this week's opponent with the colorful radio voice of the Panthers, Mick Mixon. I've known him for about 30 years since we were both minor league baseball announcers, and he is responsible for one of the most amazing feats I have ever witnessed. I'll share what that is later in the show. All of that is straight ahead, but first, here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, or Podbean. It's the greatest invention since the automatic garage door opener. When my wife and I moved back to Cincinnati in 2011, we got a garage for the first time in our lives, and I love hitting that little button when I pull into the driveway. Now, let's get to football.
Flacco throws, caught at the 15, the tackle made on Snead, and the Ravens cannot stop the clock. Safety Sam Hubbard with the tackle as the game comes to an end, and the Bengals open the season 2-0, scoring 34 in each of their first two games. They beat the Ravens tonight 34-23.
That's how it sounded last Thursday as the Bengals beat the Ravens on Thursday Night Football. Cincinnati is one of seven NFL teams that still has a perfect record after 2 weeks, and the only one in the AFC North. But last week's win was costly. Defensive end Michael Johnson suffered a knee injury. Rookie center Billy Price suffered a foot injury. And Joe Mixon, who is currently second in the NFL in rushing, also suffered a knee injury. Fortunately, none of them are season-ending. Mixon has had 22 touches in each of the first two games, and while he is out, the bulk of those carries and catches will go to Giovanni Bernard. He knows his coaches and teammates are looking to him to step up.
I try to step up every game. You know, it's, I don't know, it's just one of those things where everybody's like, okay, now it's your, you know, it's like, dude, I prepare exactly the same each and every single week, whether I know I'm getting the ball or not. You know, it doesn't change for me, you know. I feel like people are like freaking out, but it's just like, my goodness, like, it's football. We are, you know, guys are going to go down, the next man has to step up. And just be prepared. And I'm always one of those guys that, you know, I prepare as much as I can to be ready.
For more on Gio and other Bengals topics, time to welcome in my broadcast partner, Dave Lapham. Lap, in last Thursday's victory over Baltimore, Joe Mixon suffered a knee injury that required a surgical procedure. He's expected to be back in a few weeks, but what will the Bengals do to adjust without him?
Well, Giovanni Bernard will obviously get a bigger dose of things, but it's tough to lose the second leading rusher in the NFL at this stage, in ninth in scrimmage yards, tied for ninth. So Joe had been very, very productive. But we've seen Giovanni Bernard in the past. I mean, he had 30 touches of the football in the Detroit victory last year. So we know what he's capable of, and the guy's a warrior. I mean, pound for pound, I don't think there's anybody tougher in the National Football League.
Lap, in the Bengals' first two games of the season, I don't recall us saying Will Jackson's name very often, and there's a reason for that. Even though it's his first year as a full-time starter, teams are not throwing it in his direction.
There's no doubt, Dan. I mean, he's not being tested all that often. I think quarterbacks have to see bigger windows. They're not comfortable throwing in tight windows with William Jackson there, with his ability to close on the football and his long arms. I mean, the length and the speed he has and the short space quickness he has is very rare. There's not a whole lot of guys walking the streets that can do what William Jackson can do. And that's a luxury for a secondary coach, defensive coordinator, because, you know, like when we had Anthony Munoz on our line, offensive line, he was the eraser. Let's figure out other guys that need some help. We can help them. We don't need to help this guy. Same thing with William Jackson. We got an eraser. Now you can maybe tilt coverage and do things to help other guys in their responsibilities because William's so good one-on-one. So when you have a guy like that, Pro Bowl caliber player like that, it makes life good for – there's a big trickle-down effect with excellence of play like that to everybody else.
The Bengals have scored 34 points in each of their first two games. Three of the last four teams to score 34 or more in the first two games of the season have gone to the Super Bowl. What's impressed you about the offense in the first 2 weeks?
Probably the tempo as much as anything. And like we've talked about before, Dan, the offense is the only phase of the ball that can control it. Defense can't control tempo. Offense can. They can speed it up. They can slow it down. They can play with it. And I think that Bill Lazor, Andy Dalton and company have used it to their advantage thoroughly. Biggest example being Thursday night against the Ravens when the defensive linemen were tapping out. I'm like, they got them now. You got these big old D linemen dying in that humidity, literally tapping helmets like, I got to come out of the football game. So I think that's going to be an interesting dynamic in this very next game against the Carolina Panthers. The Panthers want to go slow. I mean, the Panthers took a lot of time between plays last year. They ran a play every 29.4 seconds, which was slowest in the NFL. So they want to run the ball, slow the tempo down, rest their great defense. Will the Bengals be able to speed it up and wear out the Carolina defense, stay on the field? That's going to be a big key. You know, don't be three and out in the thing to death if you're going up tempo because no time's coming off the clock. So I think tempo is going to play a big factor in this football game. It's going to be interesting to see how it goes. And I think that plus the wide receivers are lining up everywhere. Boyd's in the slot, outside. You know, AJ's in the slot, and he's outside, and they're on the right side, the left side. They're motioning and they're moving around. It's hard to draw a beat on a guy and double him. You know, it's like he's doing a fantastic job. The receivers are smart enough to learn all those spots. And Bill and Coach McNeil are doing a good job of moving guys around and really taking advantage, putting pressure on the defense, you know, recognition, putting pressure on the defense. Everything they're doing is punching and making the defense counterpunch instead of the other way around. I mean, with Kenny Zampezi, it was the other way around. I mean, he was trying to figure out a way to counter everything the defense was going to do in every single scenario, and at that point, you're starting to lose your aggressiveness and you're a counterpuncher. Now they're back to being aggressive with tempo and formations and motion and personnel groups and window dressing, and they're punching, making the defense counterpunch them.
Andy Dalton said something interesting about the offensive line after the Baltimore game that caught my ear. He said, we've got a smart group up there. Is that evident in their play?
I think it is. I think, again, the Baltimore game is the most recent example. There's a lot going on up there. You know, they're running some exotic, quote, blitz packages. Don Wink Martindale was bringing it all in every way you possibly could, from every angle you possibly could. And it was all being sorted out. And Andy Dalton and the offensive line were on the exact same page. You know, not perfectly. There were some times where Andy bailed the O-line out and the O-line bailed Andy out. Not just the offensive line, the tight ends, the running backs, everybody involved in the protection. And then the receivers and quarterback have to be on the same page too. When they see a safety in the box, he's going to blitz, side adjust, run the slant, AJ, quick slant, make a guy miss to the house. So I think it starts with the offensive line being in concert with Andy Dalton, though particularly his center, Billy Price, being in concert with Andy. And then Trey Hopkins came in, very intelligent guy, in concert with Andy Dalton. And I don't think Andy had to correct, you know, Billy Price or Trey Hopkins very much in terms of protections that they were calling based on the fronts that they were presented. So I do think that it's a very very bright group up front, particularly where you have to have it at the center position, because he's the quarterback of the offensive line making the calls and dictating, you know, everybody's assignments from there.
Let's talk about an unsung hero on defense, safety Sean Williams, ejected in week one for his hit on Andrew Luck. And then in week two, he might have had the best game of his Bengals career, a sack, an interception, a forced fumble, and eight tackles.
Unbelievable game. Great comeback performance, bounce back performance. But I think the safeties in general throw him into the group. Against Indianapolis, Fedgelum had 9 unassisted tackles, 10 total, forced fumble, fumble recovery, touchdown. Bates had 8 unassisted tackles. Against Baltimore, Sean Williams, 6 unassisted, 2 more assists, 8 total, a sack, and an interception, and a forced fumble. Bates had 3 unassisted tackles and an interception. In two games, the safety position has given them 26 unassisted tackles, 29 total tackles, a sack, 2 forced fumbles, 2 interceptions, fumble recovery, and a touchdown. That dog will hunt all day, every day. It's out there pointing and barking, boy. I mean, those safeties are getting it done, making play after play. And, you know, now you think about oh, boy, when they decided to let George go, they felt good about what they had. And they felt like they were getting more athletic. They had no problem with George's intelligence and everything else, obviously, but they felt like they wanted to have more athleticism and potential for turnover as a result of that at the safety position. The first couple of games, it's panning out.
The Bengals on the road this week against the 1-1 Carolina Panthers, a team that went to the playoffs a year ago, led by a former NFL MVP at quarterback, QB1, Cam Newton.
Genetic freak. I mean, he's bigger than everybody on the field except the defensive tackles. I remember in the 37-37 tie they played here at Paul Brown Stadium, he came out of the locker room for warm-ups just to jog around the field, and he had on a stocking hat and a hood and sunglasses, and he had his headset on. And, you know, I'm like, that's a pretty good-looking defensive end right there, and he runs up and it's Cam Newton. Man, that guy's a specimen. So, you know, the thing about him, he has a powerful throwing arm. He can reach any quadrant of the football field equally well. Sometimes his accuracy leaves something to be desired, but he can power it. There's no doubt about that. Plus, he runs the football. I mean, he's the leading rusher last year. He's a leading rusher this year. Some of it is called runs. Some of it is improvisational, and he'll kill you in both. I think sometimes when the play breaks down, the play he creates is sometimes better than the play that was called. He's one of those kind of guys, Dan. You know, and he's 2 for 2 on 3rd and 1 so far this season. He's just he's a big old beast to try to take care of. There's no doubt. In that tie game I'm talking about, he killed him on the ground down the stretch. Every third down, he would keep the football on his own read and turn it up the football field and generate moving the chain. So he's a different quarterback. And I credit Norv Turner, you know, what he's doing with Cam Newton and with McCaffrey. He realizes he has to tailor an offense to their strengths. So it's almost more like a college offense. You know, it's an option. They've run the triple option, and they'll zone read and they'll run quarterback power, and McCaffrey will be a lead blocker for Cam Newton, and it just puts an extra hat at the line of scrimmage. Usually the quarterback doesn't do anything, so you have one less blocker. Well, when he's running the ball, you have 10 blockers instead of 9. So it makes a big difference what they're doing with him, and Norv Turner is taking advantage of it to the fullest.
Last thing, Lap. Vontae Davis of the Buffalo Bills retired at halftime last week. What's the most bizarre thing you've witnessed at halftime of a game?
I think my rookie year, you're kind of, young, snot-nosed, whatever, and I remember watching a Boston Red Sox game at Fenway Park with my mother, and I look in the dugout, and Ken Hawk Harrelson smoking in the dugout, and I was stunned. I'm like, what the heck? My mother's like, they're just guys. They're like your dad. Your dad smokes. They're going to smoke, just like your father. I'm like, I just had these guys on such a hero pedestal or whatever. So then fast forward to my rookie year in the NFL, first halftime in the regular season, come in, and Bob Trumpy's over there burning sticks in the John. And they're calling the offense together to make adjustments, and he's throwing the thing in the toilet and getting rid of it before Paul Brown catches up with it. It was pretty hilarious. And then the other thing, Super Bowl halftime, it was a bad memory because we're getting crushed 20-0 because of self-destruction. And the offense is chirping at the defense is chirping at the offense, back and forth. Everybody's pissed at each other. And Forrest Gregg comes in, sit down and shut the hell up. Coaches, come over here. He comes back, he goes, look, we're making a couple of minor adjustments. Bottom line is our game plan's fine. Will you guys just start playing football instead of just, destroying yourselves with mistakes? And then when we finally started doing that, made it a lot better game in the second half. But I remember that halftime vividly for not great reasons, unfortunately, but that one sticks out in my mind as well.
If I go to the men's room right now and start smoking cigarettes, can I have Trumpy's voice?
It's funny you say that. I worked with Joel Myers doing college football. He would smoke cigarettes before the game and at halftime to cure the ham. He wanted to get that little tone, the voice of God, that baritone sound. And cigarettes definitely helped him right before the game and at halftime.
Kids, it's not worth it.
Not worth it.
Don't smoke. Now time to bring in our first guest. In my opinion, there has never been a better football play-by-play announcer on the radio than Kevin Harlan. He's also one of the very best on TV, and he'll be in the booth this Sunday at Carolina. I had the pleasure of spending time with Kevin this summer at the National Sportscasters and Sportswriters Awards Ceremony in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and he joined Dave Lapham and me on the Bengals Game Plan Show on Wednesday night.
Whether he is calling the NFL or the NBA or a drunk fan running wild on the field, nobody in broadcasting paints a more vivid picture than our next guest. He was the 2017 National Sports Broadcaster of the Year, and he will be in the booth on Sunday to call the Bengals-Panthers game. The great Kevin Harlan. Kevin, this is a treat. Welcome to the Bengals Game Plan Show.
Oh, Dan, Dave, great to be on with you guys, and it's great to be on with the Ohio Sportscaster of the Year. Dan,
there you
congratulations.
Go.
Great seeing you and your wife this past summer, and so glad to be on with you guys. I'll look forward to seeing you in the press box on Sunday.
Same here, Kevin. Great to hear that voice, and it's a very distinctive voice. Once you hear Kevin Harlan once, you know it's Kevin Harlan, I'll tell you that. You do a great job.
My kids, they plug their ears. They do not want to hear it anymore, believe me.
I guess my first question is, from a national media standpoint, the Bengals were not just under the radar, they were off the radar. I mean, nobody was even giving them 2 cents worth of notice. But here, off to a 2-0 start, 1-0 in the division, they're in the top 10 in, you know, people's power rankings in the National Football League now. Where were you with respect to the Cincinnati Bengals, and where are you now?
Well, I'm always bullish on the Bengals when a quarterback like Andy Dalton, who has had success, is stable in that position, at least from a national standpoint and perspective, is there. There was no disruption in terms of Marvin, but there were some changes, as we know, with assistant coaches.
Yep.
I think that, you know, your offensive coordinator, Bill Lazor, you know, now beginning as the full-time OC and last year taking over early in the year, you know, it's had an off-season to kind of plant his philosophy as it was developed the year before. You enter camp, you know, hitting the ground running. You know, I think Andy, too, feels and probably felt, and you know far more than I do, but it would seem that at this stage of his career, and where he has tasted some individual success and some team success, they've yet to win in the postseason. They've yet to, you know, kind of crack that barrier, which is difficult to do. But I think that the message is sent by management when Marvin is retained, and they have a chance to, you know, perhaps build on what is, I think, a pretty significant core. And then you've got the start Mixon had, and A.J. is off to a great start, as we know, in the big first half he had Thursday against Baltimore. And the offense, just almost on every level, is really producing. And, you know, you score that many points the first 2 weeks, something has clicked. Now, whether this is the natural maturation of the offensive side, you know, Atkins is playing out of his mind on the defensive line. You know, who knows? I mean, it's hard to say what flips a switch for a team. And while they're not, you know, in terms of maybe a top 10 team in the league going into the year, I'm glad they're being recognized as one right now. And a 2-0 start is something to boast about. Because I tell you this, my feeling is, Dan and Dave, is that the preseason is not like the preseason when Dave played. It's the starters aren't playing. They're saving what they're doing for practices. They're trying to conserve energy and health more than anything else. And you almost use September as an extended preseason. So right now, the first 2 weeks are gone. I'm thinking these last couple weeks in September, certainly the beginning of October, gives us a pretty definitive compass reading on where all these teams are headed. But so far, you know, with a lot of up-and-down performances in the league, and we've seen it from Carolina, for instance, this has got to be incredibly promising if you're the Bengals to be starting off the season 2-0.
Kevin Harlan is our guest. He will call Sunday's game at Carolina on CBS. Kevin, you do the NFL and the NBA. Is Cam Newton the closest thing to LeBron James in football?
Good call.
Well, I think LeBron is wired differently than anybody but Michael and Kobe. They're those three guys, and I've had a chance to call Michael from the time he was a rookie, and Kobe from the time he was a rookie, and LeBron from his rookie year on. And they all possess that same, you know, look, mental stamina and endurance and focus and the drive they have to be successful is without question and on display every play of virtually every game. I don't think I can say that about Newton. The body language of Jordan, Kobe, and LeBron is always the same. the body language of Cam is not that way. And I don't know if he is wired the same way. Now, are there football players wired like NBA players? There are some. I think Kuechly is that kind of guy for Carolina.
Yep.
I think he's wired in a different kind of way. I think Brady is wired that way. And it's a different sport. I get all that. But I don't see that kind of wiring in Cam. Physically, yes. Mm-hmm. Physically, it's all there. He's maybe a little bit more, he lumbers more, perhaps. He's not, maybe the quick twitch isn't there that a LeBron has. But physically, you'd be hard-pressed to find anybody 6'5", 6'6", that's more gifted, has more God-given athletic ability than Cam Newton.
Incredible. You're right. I'm thinking everybody listening, there are production meetings that the TV crews do where they meet with coaches, the head coach, the coordinators, and select players in their preparation on Saturday for the Sunday game. And in those production meetings, like my question is, Kevin, who, what coach in one category and what player in the other category has impressed you the most over the years? When they were done with that production meeting, who did you sit back after interviewing and say, my goodness, that's special? Are there any guys that you could separate in both instances as coach and player?
Well, Peyton was the most accurate, detailed, called you by your first name, regardless of how many people we had in the room.
Right.
He'd walk in the room, he'd meet five people, including myself, and he would know every name, and he would answer the question by name to that person. Eye contact, not a note in front of him, and would give you great detailed information on what he saw on tape, what his notes told him during the week of preparation. Brady walks in a room, and his eyes are bright and wide and alert, but he glides into a room and sits in a chair and literally does not move a muscle. And when you, if Rich Gannon asks a question to his left, and then I would ask a question on his right, his head would like turn in slow motion from Rich and then gaze to me, not blink, look, think about every question for like about a 2 or 3 second pause, and then answer thoughtfully, but like he had just gotten up from a nap and was just like his heartbeat had to be like at about 20 a minute. So like they're like different guys.
Right.
The coach that you know, Tomlin is incredibly intense when he talks to you. Marvin is like talking to a friend because he's always smiling when he talks to you, and you're put at ease and at comfort, and he's pretty honest about stuff. And you know when he's trying to give you an answer without trying to color or put a guy in a corner or tag him in a positive or negative way, but lets you know what he thinks by the tone of his answer. Mike McCarthy at Green Bay is incredibly thoughtful and deep, and will give you not only a history of why a play works or doesn't, or why an offensive series is working or not, but gives you like stories from the past that lead you to where he's thinking right now. And then Belichick won't tell you one thing about his team,
right,
but he'll tell you everything you want to know about the opposing team to the minutest detail. And then when you want to ask him about his team again, it's vanilla and about a five-word answer.
Right.
If you ask him about NFL history, Belichick will go on for 5 minutes, will not stop, and he'll give you the most colorful, poignant, meaningful, thorough answer on a topic of NFL history that you could possibly want. So they're all different. None of them have been alike. Manning has been the most interesting because he has so much great information. You can't write fast enough to keep up with what he's telling you.
Hmm. A couple more questions for the great Kevin Harlan. You've called the last 8 Super Bowls on network radio, many, if not all, with Boomer Esiason. And Boomer announced earlier this year that he is stepping down from doing games on the radio. What are you going to miss about working with our buddy Boomer Esiason?
We would always talk about everything but football when he'd walk in the booth, and knowing that his day had started at about 5 a.m., he went 5 hours on radio and TV, got in a plane, flew to our side of our Monday game, would sleep for an hour, get up, shower, and try to be alert, walk in that booth, bright-eyed, and very much involved with the scene and with the sponsors they would bring in, and knew the teams, had great headlines on each, and what he lacked maybe in knowing, you know, individual notes about individual guys, he knew all the prominent players. That he knew what the public wanted to hear. He always had a great pulse on what the hot buttons were, and during the broadcast, he would always punch them and talk about those hot topics, whether it was individually or about the team. But he always talked about his family. We know the story about his son, who, by the way, Boomer told me, is on an experimental drug, has never felt better, never been healthier, never been more active. Gunner is at the very top of his game in terms of health. And Boomer is the first one to tell you that he credits his wife for keeping that boy alive. He's honest in his appraisal. His daughter's engaged, so he's trying to save, he tells me, every penny he has for the wedding next summer. He said, I'd rather fly them to some romantic island and have 50 people, but I know that we're going to have it in the Hamptons, and it's going to be 500 people, and it's going to cost triple what it would cost if we took them on a private plane to some island in the Bahamas. Right. So those are the kind of conversations we have, because we're both fathers, have kids, and I just recently had our daughters get married. So a lot to share. And when you're with the guy that long, you become very, very friendly. Kurt Warner is all football, and while he's a great family man, father of seven, Kurt watches every game, every play of every game. By the time he walks in that Monday night booth, has a comment on every single team and every quarterback and offense in the league. And I could ask him the most remote question, and he would have a thorough, ready answer. And so they're different in that way, but they're both quality guys, and I'm so lucky to have been with Boomer and now be with Kurt.
Amazing. Kevin, who basically inspired you? Who are you listening to as a young person and said, I want to do that? What broadcaster kind of blazed that trail for you in your mind? And who's your mentor? I mean, who was the guy that really took you under their wing and told you everything they knew about the profession?
Well, the first voice I remember is John Facendas, and then that led to Keith Jackson and Ray Scott and Jack Whitaker and Don Crickey, a younger Don Crickey, and those voices, those Frank Gleiber, no longer with us, but those are the voices I heard when I was growing up. I used to get 3WE in Cleveland, listen to Joe Tate do the Cavs. I listened to Jim Durham do the Chicago Bulls, right. Then WCFL in Chicago. I grew up in Green Bay, so I got WJR in Detroit and would listen to baseball with Ernie Harwell. Wow. So those are the voices that I grew up with. And in terms of a mentor, I've had so many wonderful men in this business that have been so incredibly helpful with advice and friendship and mentoring. I think all of us look to the very beginnings of our career. My dad was in journalism before he got in pro football, and so he gave me a lot of the great aspects of reporting about how to construct a thought in a story, and those have lingered throughout my career. I went to the University of Kansas, and a former Cincinnati Reds broadcaster, Tom Hedrick, who had done the very first Super Bowl on CBS radio back in 1967-68. He was the voice of the Jayhawks, and he took me under his wing, gave me all these opportunities that led to my first job, which was in the NBA when I was 21. So wow. I've had a lot of people. None of us, I know I speak for Dan too, none of us are in the broadcasting business without several people helping us, believing in us, giving us a chance, giving us an opportunity, believing in what we can do, and showing kindness and thoughtfulness along the way. And those are the people that I remember literally every time I get ready to do a broadcast. How lucky I've been to have those wonderful people come across my path.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Kevin as much as we did. And if by chance you have never heard his call of a drunk fan running on the field in a Monday Night Football game, look up Kevin Harlan, drunk fan, on YouTube, specifically the version that is paired with a fan's video. It might be the greatest play-by-play call of all time. Another favorite broadcaster of mine is Carolina Panthers play-by-play voice, Mick Mixon. We got to know each other about 30 years ago when we were both broadcasting minor league baseball games, and Mick gave me the thrill of witnessing a double eagle a two on a par five. Mick Mixon joined Dave Lapham and me for this week's Know the Foe segment.
Panthers voice Mick Mixon is our guest. Let's get down to football, my friend. Let's start with the Panthers offensive line. It's been battered by injury this year. What is the status of the guys up front, and how has this makeshift group done in the first two games?
Yeah, good question, Dan. It's been amazing. You always hear, you know, people like you and me, broadcasters who didn't play the game like Dave and others did. Coaches are always lecturing us on how important O-line play is, how many NFL teams go about as far as their O-lines will be able to take them, and how the Coach Rivera has his hand-in-glove theory that you take even just one guy out, and now there's a different voice on either side of him, and how just how complex it is. And so for the Panthers to have had the continuity that they have had without personnel continuity, the Panthers are playing like they know what they're doing up front with so many injuries. It's one of the more remarkable stories here in the Carolinas with regard to Panther football. Now, we have not yet faced a front that rushes in with the tenacity of the Cincinnati Bengals, but it's Coach Rivera told me a few minutes ago, he said it's going to be the same five this week that started the Atlanta game. We got some guys close to coming back, but not quite ready yet.
Okay, I was going to ask you about Trey Turner with the concussion. I mean, he's one that was on the injury list with a concussion, and Searcy, the starting safety, with a concussion. So it looks like those guys are going to make the dance. The bye week coming up, right? I mean, after the Bengals, you guys have the bye. So Trey Turner, obviously, you gave him a lot of money, and it precluded being able to pay Andy Norwell, who ended up going to Jacksonville. So he's one of your anchors in the offensive line. I was thinking, man, if he's down with a concussion, that could be tough. But are both those guys going to be able to play?
Searcy, probably not, Dave. Trey Turner, maybe. Turner has to get out of the protocol. He's got one more neurological exam, I think, to clear maybe tomorrow, and it could be that he could get oiled up and maybe play some. You know, if I could tell you one thing on the Know the Foe segment that you may not know about the Carolina Panthers and their offensive line play, is that Ryan Khalil is that microprocessor up front. He's got the hard drive that keeps all the files collated. And so Turner's mean. He's a fantastic guard, but he'll leave a void that's not easily replaceable. But Ryan Khalil exerts a calming. Did you play with guys like this when you played, Dave? I mean, I know you played in the line, but there, if you felt like if you had that player to the left or to the right of you, it was going to have a calming influence over the whole group.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, when I was a rookie, Bob Johnson, the very first draft pick in Bengal history, was that kind of guy. Now he's a successful entrepreneur, a great businessman here in Cincinnati. One of those guys, like you said, that was just a computer mind, you know, and just knew everything about everything. You couldn't fool him. He made every call exactly appropriately, all that kind of thing. It was very, very calming for sure.
Well, Cam Newton played well. I think you guys would agree. I mean, this was some of Cam Newton's, and to Dan's question earlier, so about the O-line. So Cam Newton had some of his best moments as a Panther, making plays from the pocket in Atlanta with two guys from the recycle bin, and Panthers are going on the street, Radio Shack, Orange Julius, trolling the mall, looking for big fat kids that can play in the O-line. And it's
come on now, O-linemen
so
are great athletes. Come on now. I know one thing. We can pass protect better than a quarterback can, and we can throw it. I mean, we can throw the football better than the quarterback can pass protect. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I don't doubt that. I think that in the Panthers, we've had some guys. Jordan Gross was a very good athlete. Yeah. Some of these guys are much more agile than you think they might be.
Yeah, Panthers radio voice Mick Mixon is our guest. Let's talk about Norv Turner taking over as the offensive coordinator this year for Carolina. What's the big difference for Norv Turner offense compared to what they've done for the last few years?
Ah, great. I love it. Here it is in a nutshell. Norv Turner, what did Norv Turner and the world's greatest martial artist, Bruce Lee, have in common? More than you might think, because Bruce Lee famously said, use that which works. Do not get set into one form. Adapt. Be like water. Water can crash. Water can flow. So what does that have to do with Norv Turner? Well, that's exactly how he got his black belt in offensive football. He has an offense that is balanced. And by balanced, I don't mean it's going to run 35 times a game and throw it 35 times a game. But it's an offense that will be expert enough at a variety of styles to be able to use that which works, to identify game-specific matchups that the Panthers think are advantageous and take advantage of those during the game.
It's interesting watching tape. It looks – it's almost like Bum Phillips said about Don Shula. He can take his'n and beat your'n. He can take your'n and beat his'n. In other words, whatever he has from a personnel standpoint, he will utilize into an offense. He will form the offense around the players, not try to pigeonhole or put square pegs in round holes with his offense. It's not going to work. You know, I mean, when he had Dan Marino, he threw the heck out of it. When he had Zonkin kick, he ran the heck out of it. So – That seems to be what Turner's doing, because he's got this freak quarterback that can run the heck out of the football, and he's utilizing McCaffrey brilliantly. I mean, it does not look like a typical Norv Turner offense that I've seen in the past, but man, when Cam runs the football and you have 10 other blockers, normally when the running game occurs, the quarterback hands it off, stands around, picks his nose. There's only 9 blockers for the runner. Now there are 10 when Cam runs the ball with design runs. In the red zone, he's amazing. 53 red zone touchdown rushes because you have that extra helmet to leverage people. I mean, that is just using your personnel, like you said, to a very, very high level.
That's brilliantly said. And I think Norv Turner, if he were eavesdropping on our conversation, or if he walked by my office here at the stadium and I could hand him the phone, he would probably agree with you if his personal modesty would allow him to. I think that is his philosophy. His stated goal is to be able to take away what a defense most wants to do, and to have an offense. I mean, all these talking heads. I got so sick to death when Norv Turner was first hired. Some friends of mine, or I should say ex-friends of mine, and some ex-relatives that I've expunged from the family, call me up and say, Mick, is Norv going to be able to make Cam Newton happy? Well, this just in from the curmudgeonly old man section of life. It's not his job to make Cam Newton happy. It's Cam Newton's job to make Norv Turner happy.
Right.
And I think that's I think Cam gets that. He understands it, and I think he's trying.
If they win, I assume Cam's happy. If Norv helps him win, that will do the trick.
Yes, Norv doesn't coach Cam as much as Scott Turner does, Norv Turner's son. So it's kind of a family affair. But Cam Newton's misunderstood. I wish you guys could know him a little bit, because he can brood and be and appear detached and irritated at reporters' questions. Do you sometimes wish he was the Toastmaster General and knew every reporter's name and won the press conference? Of course. But that's just not who he is. But who he is a quarterback that's combative fire burns so hot that he's not a very good loser. But his teammates really enjoy playing with him.
I remember when Andy Dalton came out the same year as Cam. If Cam was there at number 4, they were going to take him. Bengals were going to take him. He went earlier, obviously, and they took A.J. Green. Not a bad pick. And then they got Andy Dalton in the second round. So the Andy and A.J. years have been very, very good to the Bengals from 2011. But I remember Marvin Lewis and the coaching staff, I remember talking to them after Cam Newton came to visit Marvin Lewis and his people, and they were like blown away. The kid, big smile, took over the room, unbelievable personality. Everybody gravitated toward him, could see him being undisputed, unquestioned leader of whatever you want him to lead. They couldn't say enough good things about his, you know, his personality and his character as such. Is that the type of guy that you know?
Indeed. And there's a coaching friend of mine, Steve Logan, who was a quarterback coach in San Francisco and Tampa Bay. And when he was at Tampa Bay, Cam Newton was coming out at Auburn. And the general manager of the Bucks told Steve Logan, write a full report, give me a full dossier on Cam Newton. So Logan told me he got out a piece of paper and he wrote the following sentence: God made him, there's only one of him, draft him if you can, and handed it in.
Unbelievable. Can't let you run without this question. Luke Kuechly, Cincinnati born and bred, St. X High School, went to Boston College. What makes Luke Kuechly Luke Kuechly?
Servant's heart, one of the all-time great guys that you will ever meet. People talk about his instincts and his savvy, and he's got that. He may be the best zone drop pass coverage linebacker since Brian Urlacher, maybe one of the best that's ever played in the modern era of pro football. But it's not an accident and it's not magic. He studies. I guarantee you he's here right now. I'm on the second floor of the building. The football offices are across the elevator lobby, and then downstairs the players. I guarantee you somewhere he's down there right now looking at Dalton, looking at AJ Green, looking at Gio Bernard, looking at Eifert and the O-line, trying to get even a tiny advantage that'll help him in this game.
I remember reading where he thought the vertical passing game aspect of his game was his weakness, and he was going to make sure it never was again. Shoot, he had 3 interceptions last year. I think he's the best vertical drop linebacker in football. I think he's the best defensive player in football. The kid is unbelievable with his instincts and his fast twitch. His first step is ridiculous. It's unbelievable.
I know. He was mic'd up. A couple years ago, he was mic'd up. You know, they put a mic, NFL Films comes in, puts a mic on, and Kuechly was devastated by what he heard. He heard himself shrieking and yelling and hooting and howling in a voice that he did not even recognize as his own. And he asked our PR people, don't ever let them mic me up again. My point is that he's got that switch that he flips.
Right.
Where he's able to get to that Warrior King place where every single play is personal to Luke Kuechly.
Our thanks to Mick Mixon, and that's going to do it for this episode of the podcast. If you haven't done so already, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or Podbean and give it a rating or leave a comment. Your feedback's been very helpful, and 5-star ratings help more Bengals fans find this podcast. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.